Tidies High by Blondie on ABC Local Radio. Rosie Beaton filling in for Dom Knight this evening. I hope you've had an awesome day. But are you as rich as a 17-year-old that has just scored $30 million because Yahoo has purchased his new summary app? And Sumley Stilgarian is with me. He's actually an internet and technology journalist and commentator. He's going to fill us in. How are you, Sumley?
G'day, Rosie. Look, I want a pina colada now after that.
Oh, Mom. I've totally. How good are pina coladas?
That's a night for it.
They're my favourite of all cocktails.
Oh, I'm not too afraid of a Long Island iced tea myself.
Oh, they're potent.
Mm.
And listen, I think that this 17-year-old that's just scored $30 million for coming up with an app in his bedroom could certainly buy pretty much an island, don't you think?
Well, he could do. $30 million's quite a bit, though he does need to share it around. I mean, there have been investors along the way. I mean, he's developed this app, but there's a major Chinese internet investor put $250,000 in. Ashton Kutcher is involved, the actor.
Is he?
Yes, there's a whole and a whole raft of names that people who are into the internet startup company kind of scene will recognise that there's some serious investors and advisors.
Wow.
Yoko Ono is on the list.
Oh my goodness. Well, somebody was actually in the news last year. I know that the ABC's Mark Colvin actually spoke to the young inventor last November. I mean, what's the new development? Why is this in the news again?
Well, it's reached the next stage of evolution that internet startup companies go through. Last year, he was really hunting around for the angel investors as the first stage are called. He was a lad with an idea and a good idea, and he knew how to make it together and how to make it come together. He knew the kind of people and skills he needed for it to come together. But what, of course, he needed was the money and those people to come on board to refine the concept, get it going, get users on board. Well, that's happened, and over the course of the year, that developed. And he's at the next stage now, which is, hey, this is a working service, and there's a serious investor wanting to come on board, in this case, Yahoo, who, as you say, have said, right, well, we'll buy that, thank you, for $30 million and make that part of our empire.
Wow. But how does, in the kind of, let's strip it back a bit, when he was trying to look for funding, I mean, how does he get in contact with people with this kind of money?
You just email them. I mean, this is the magic thing about the internet. If you just know someone's name, or you know, hey, here's this Chinese investor. He invested in this company. He invested, for example, in Apple's iPhone. There's that assistant you talk to, Siri, that gets the information for you. He was one of the investors in that technology.
Right.
So young Nick Dalwazio, I suppose his name is pronounced, he knew that this was the kind of technology he needed to understand the websites that were delivering the news and then summarize it and deliver it. And so, you know, that's where he's up to now. It's a refined concept, and he did assemble the right players. Now, he's obviously a bright kid. He started programming when he was 12 years old and was self-taught.
Oh.
This is the wonderful it sounds amazing, and sure, he's bright. And the wonderful thing about the internet, though, is that it does put all of human knowledge there at your fingertips. So you can choose whether you want to spend your evenings at home watching, you know, videos of kittens riding on skateboards.
Yeah.
Or whether you want to teach yourself to program. And he did the second path. Now, all right, I shouldn't, you know, belittle the fact, because he's obviously right up the top end of the bell curve when it comes to smarts. But he also had, I guess, the guts to just contact these people and say, hey, here's my idea. And it is good, because, I mean, we all suffer from information overload. We search for things on the internet. And then, you know, hey, which of all of these things that have come back in my search results do I really want to look at? Now, I think another part of his success, though, because this is stuff that's being played with for years, and the back-end technology is been around since the Cold War, it's a great story. The smart kid, isn't it? He presents well on camera. He tells a good story. And in the internet startup world, there are hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of companies all trying to compete for these investment dollars. And if you've got that bright, fresh, young face looking straight down the barrel of the TV camera and delivering the message. That's the sort of thing that the investors are looking for.
And still, Gary, and I need to ask, though, I mean, you know, is this built on existing technology or is this completely new, what he's come up with?
Obviously, he's contributed some of the technology and the ideas, but the back-end stuff, the technology that can take a 500 or 1,000-word news article and come back with a 25-word summary, that's actually provided by a huge organization called SRI International, which was actually spun out of Stanford University at the end of World War II, and its mission is to invest in science and technology for knowledge, commerce, prosperity, in peace, in other words, military stuff. And indeed, some of the great breakthroughs of SRI International, the computer mouse was invented there. The first robot that could move around and do things was developed there. And they again did all of the technology, or some of the technology, in Apple's Siri. And they were heavily involved back in the Cold War for getting computers to process vast amounts of text. It seems sort of strange looking at it now, because we're used to computers being able to just plow through thousands and thousands of documents. But back then they were, you know, we're talking in the 1950s and 60s, they were getting through eavesdropping, shall we say, lots of secret engineering documents from the Soviet Union or orders for the Army or Air Force or whatever they were. And there were just so many documents that they needed technology so that the analysts at the CIA and the other intelligence agencies didn't have to read them all themselves. They could quickly look at the summaries and work out which were the important documents to then read in detail. So it's built on technology that goes back many, many years. But I think this is Nick Deloisio's genius, I suppose. He knew that these were the people he needed to talk to. I mean, he knew where to get the components to then build the next step. So we don't hear so much about all of these big players in the background. Because, as I say, you know, hey, it's the story of a 17-year-old, as he is now, boy genius.
Yeah.
But you know, that's the perfect combination. So Yahoo, as I say, is betting $30 million on this. It'll be interesting to see how they go.
And, you look, if this technology's been around for so long, why hasn't anyone picked up on it? And this young bloke, you know, got in there and, I mean, and also how does it differ from Twitter feeds from news outlets?
Well, the two factors there, I suppose he's managed to think about how to put it together in an attractive package and sell it. I mean, it's all well and good to have the technical idea, but you've got to know how to market it and sell it as well. And he's managed to do that and be in the right place at the right time. The key difference about this sort of stuff, compared to just looking at a Twitter feed of a news story or, you know, a Facebook feed or something, is what you see on the Twitter feed is usually the headline and maybe the first sentence of the news story.
And then maybe a link to the original.
And a link to the original. Mm. What this does is takes the news story in its entirety, reads it, and does a bullet point summary of it.
Right.
So it comes back with what are the three key bullet points about this story. So it might be Julia Gillard calls leadership challenge, Rudd says he won't stand, Simon Crean left like a shag on a rock. Yeah, that would be last week's. And then, you know, you could put, well, do I want to read the quotes and what they said? Or you decide, well, that's all I need to know about that story.
Wow.
They're the three key points and I'll move along. So that's the difference. It's not just taking the first sentence or two. It's actually summarizing it. And the technology is not you. You can actually dial in how long a summary do you want. So if you can post any text in there you like you can take, if you're a university student or even a school student, and this is how the guy got the idea. He was studying for his history exam and said, I've got to read all of these books and all of these chapters. It's too much. If only someone could produce a summary for me.
Gee whiz. This is incredible. Rosie Beaton with you on ABC Local Radio. I'm joined by Still Gerrion, and we're talking about an amazing 17-year-old that's come up with an app called Sumly, which is a new summary app. And Still Gerrion's an internet and technology journalist and commentator. And will this change the way that we consume news, do you think? I mean, is our lives getting that fast and crazy that we have to go on and look at apps like this?
Well, this is the question I think is still open, because I think the news junkies and people like me who have to read a lot, or anyone who works as a journalist or a researcher or a university student who has to read a lot of material, does want to get the summary, and they you know, are these days looking at the news on the morning train into work. If you're if you wander around the carriages on the morning trains in Sydney, you'll see that there's far more people looking on their tablets or phones than having a slice of dead tree. I mean,
and
no one
they
does
get
that
narky
anymore
when they get into the tunnels and there's no internet access.
that's right. So there is that. The question will become, will the news producers be happy to have their story summarised in that way?
And will that take it out of context, do you think, Stilgarian?
Well, you know, that comes down to how good the software is. Mm. And it's getting very good these days. In a similar way, you look at Google Translate or some of the other online translation tools, they're getting pretty good if it's a subject area that it's got a lot of material on. So again, if it's a common area with a lot of news, so you're talking sports results or, you know, Canberra political news where there's lots of material, it might do quite well. But if something comes out of left field, just a strange story that isn't seen very often, it might struggle with that a bit. And I think it comes down to, I said at the front, well, you know, the internet is made for looking at pictures of cats on skateboards.
Yeah.
and really the broad market is going to be for, you know, the lighter news and if you like consumer grade news, not professional grade news. So the guts of it will come back to, has Yahoo got the numbers right? I mean, Yahoo is still the fourth most visited site on the internet. And people think, you know, Google is at the top, which it is. Google and Facebook are number one and two. Yahoo's at number four. But Yahoo only has people spending, its users spend on average 9 minutes a day on the site. But for Google, it's 15 minutes a day.
Really?
And for Facebook, it's 28 minutes a day.
Well, that says everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, and of course, exactly. And in the
maybe
industry,
Facebook need to get news feeds.
Well, you know, Facebook has the news feeds which really count, yeah, which are the ones about your friends and family.
Right.
And they're producing that news feed which is tailored exactly to you.
But most of it, you don't really care.
well, that's life, really, isn't it? 90% of everything is rubbish.
So, Stilgarian, I need to ask you, the software, is this going to actually make editorial judgments? I mean, what kind of an output? How is it programmed?
No. It sits between you and the news sites. So let's say you're a rugby fan and you want to know about the Parramatta Eels, then you type in Parramatta Eels and comes, and instead of getting the news stories with the headlines, you get these three or four bullet point summaries of the stories.
Okay.
So
what's next?
Well, what's next, I suppose, it needs to read it out to you, or it needs to decide in advance what news you're interested in, and that is already happening. And we even have robots writing the news now.
Gee, there you go. Are they smart robots?
No, they're pretty dumb so far, but they can work with highly structured things. So again, sports results, if you're doing a two-paragraph story about the sports results, you know the structure. It's team A struggled in the first half, and at halftime they were behind 4-17, but they surged in the second half and so on, and won 33-22. And those sort of stories, I mean, any sporting journalist is going to shoot me now, but they're really to a template, aren't they? They really are a recipe that they follow and put them out very quickly. And so the news-making robots are doing things like reporting on college-level sports in the United States, where they can't afford to put a human journalist onto it anymore.
Wow.
And reporting on the stock market. So
that's crazy.
Yeah. So they notice a mining company's price suddenly goes up and the others haven't, well, the robot notices and can do a quick story. Well, shares in Bloggo Mining have surged to $7 this morning, while other mining companies remain static. This is occurring a week after Mr. Fredo Frog became chairman. You know, and just pulls out the last week's story and says, "Well, this is what happens." And What that lacks, though, of course, is the human understanding and analysis.
Right, because robots can make mistakes, as can computers.
Oh, everyone can make mistakes.
That's right.
Yes.
So how do you think Google feel about all this, and why haven't they developed an app like this?
I think they probably have stuff happening in the works. Google is ahead of Yahoo. They're playing around with other things. They're playing around a lot with location-based services, so they understand from your Android smartphone or tablet exactly where you are, and their Google Maps products form part of a strategy to tailor services that understand where you are. So it can be as simple as you are searching for an Italian restaurant and it knows you're in Wagga Wagga, so it makes sure it gives you the Wagga Wagga restaurants and not those from
Even to the point that I'm pretty sure that there's things going on where it knows your buying trends and then it'll send you information on where to go and buy the specials.
Yes, that's already happening, and the big buzzword that you're going to be hearing a lot of in 2013 is big data, that everything is being recorded. If companies can record that data about your buying patterns, about where you are and how you travel and when you're awake and when you're asleep. And there is a whole kind of confidential trade, if you like, between companies of information about you. Probably one of the leaders in this is Target in the United States.
I've heard about this, and they actually have decided to not put the specials on when the school run happens because the mums aren't at the stores.
Yeah, what's the point? And the other one...
And they know that from tracking their phones.
Yeah, and exactly. And they know when a woman has become pregnant by the changes in her shopping list.
Wow.
You know, because there'll be certain vitamins will go on the shopping list. The body lotion goes from a scented to an unscented lotion. You know, and all of the things which when you become pregnant, your doctor tells you that you should do. And they pick that up on the shopping list and therefore send that woman at the appropriate time during the pregnancy, either it's, you know, those health products up the front or when it gets a little closer to the birth, it's going to be baby clothes and whatever. But so they don't give the game away, they also make sure they're sending her special coupons to, you know, power tools and cornflakes and other things.
Interesting.
Because, I mean, you'd get a bit creeped out.
What if you don't want all this tracking kind of software to know anything about you? You just have to go with it with the way the world's going, don't you? If you want to have a mobile phone.
Yeah, I mean, you can go through and turn a lot of stuff off on your phone. You can turn off, you know, you can go through all of the privacy settings and turn everything off. But if you do that, you're also turning off the features that make it useful.
Yes.
So it's a trade-off. And where I think personally we're at now is that we are giving away a lot about our personal lives to companies. And we do not yet understand what this will mean in the future because, I mean, the companies collecting the information are only just beginning to understand this as well. Mm. And I think we're really conducting a grand social experiment that we'll figure out in a generation or so whether it was all a good idea or not. And then you know, maybe there'll be a backlash against services like Facebook. Maybe we'll all go, no, we don't mind having all of this information done. We find all of this so useful that the initial creepiness of an anonymous company suddenly figuring out we're pregnant or whether we're starting to come down with diabetes before we know ourselves. Another one I love telling a story. Someone worked out a few years ago that if you have someone's music playlist from their late teens, you can predict what their political voting patterns will be in the future.
If they're playing Rage Against the Machine?
I mean that's an oversimplified version of it. Yeah, but that's basically it.
Wow, that's fascinating. I need to say too, I mean, obviously with this kind of technology, forensics, I mean, it makes their jobs a lot easier still, Gary.
Yes, and in the news, what was it, the week before last in Melbourne, the trial started against the alleged murderer of Jill Maher, the journalist.
Very sad.
Who was found dead. Yeah, and a key part of the evidence that was presented in that trial was that, well, as she was being abducted and murdered, she had her mobile phone in her handbag or pocket or whatever, and that location was recorded.
And they tracked it up the train line too.
The train line through a tollway gate. So they knew that her phone had gone through the toll gate on the freeway at a certain time. So they checked the cameras, noticed, you know, which car registration numbers are going through the toll gate around that time. And then they pulled the phone records of all of those drivers, and they found that one man's matched.
Mm.
That everywhere her phone went from that point on until her death, his phone went as well, or at least that's what was alleged by the police in the court.
Yeah, we'll find out the results out in the court. Still, Gary, and you're a fascinating man. I could talk to you for hours.
Oh, well, better not, because you've probably got other things to do.
Thank you so much for filling us in today on the app No One Is Sumley, where a 17-year-old is now a very rich man. And great talking to you.
My pleasure, Rosie, anytime.
Thank you very much.
See you later.